You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to a Monday evening episode of Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best, well, at least regular season basketball team, postseason still to be determined. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat on this Monday, it's an off day for the Rockets. They'll be back at practice tomorrow, gearing up for Wednesday's Game 2. So to discuss what happened last night in Game 1 and also look ahead to Game 2 on Wednesday night, I'm joined by a frequent guest here at Locked On Rockets. It's Craig Ackerman. He is the team's radio play-by-play broadcaster these first two games, which you can hear on News Radio 740 here in Houston, and then for the TV call this weekend on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest. Craig, how's it going today, buddy?
Hey, it's doing well. Beautiful day in Houston. Rockets got a win last night. Perhaps maybe they should not have gotten under most circumstances, but we'll take it and hope the team improves moving along in this series.
Craig, how's your voice holding up after the calls that James Harden gave you in the fourth quarter?
It's a little scratchy today. I was actually out at my son's soccer match yesterday afternoon before the game, but it was a little windy, so it certainly didn't help the throat a little bit. But James was just spectacular, as he was, for the most part, the entire regular season. The Rockets needed every last bit of his 44 last night. He carried his team to the win, and if that's the case, moving forward, I'll deal with a scratchy voice, for the next 2 months, hopefully.
Given the way the last playoff run ended, do you take anything extra out of Game 1 having that quintessential Harden game? Because fair or unfair, the questions have been out there since the end of Game 5, all of Game 6 last year against the Spurs. So in a way, it almost felt fitting that the start to this playoff run, a lot of players up and down the roster underachieved, but ultimately they still won because James Harden was that good. So if anything, I'm not going to say that it makes up for what happened in the conference semifinals, but it at least lets everyone start fresh going into this 2018 playoff run. Is that a reasonable assessment?
I mean, I think it's reasonable. I mean, I think obviously it's a new season, it's a new postseason, so there's a chance to, write another chapter in his career. And again, he was just spectacular last night in Game 1 of this series. But look, the pressure is on the Rockets. There's no question about that. Based on what they did in the regular season, the best regular season in franchise history, the best record in the NBA with 65 wins. And James said it himself last night. It was good, but it was just one game, and that's what it was. They're going to need him to play at this level if they're going to live up, again, to the lofty expectations that they set for themselves with the way that they played in the regular season. I mean, this team was expected to win this series anyway and win it relatively easily as a 1-8. But again, on a night where, as you mentioned, some other guys struggled, he picked up the slack. I think we saw that multiple times throughout the course of the regular season. Even on those rare nights where James Harden had some issues, there was typically always another guy or two to pick it up. And he was just the player last night outside of Clint Capela in the first half to carry his team to victory. It's a great way from an individual standpoint for him to begin another postseason. But again, the pressure is still very much on him and this team to ultimately make a deep playoff run, because if they don't, then in essence, the regular season gets nullified a little bit.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but the way it looked to me from an X's and O's standpoint was that the pick and roll, especially the high pick and roll with Capela, so successful early in the game, it got squeezed a little bit in the second half, in part because the shooters didn't have to be respected as much, and so kind of conversely what had to happen is just James Harden make plays one-on-one, and Daryl Morey's called him the best player in NBA history, best isolation player, that is, and ultimately that's what won the game last night. It wasn't the pick and roll. It was just one-on-one, him against Derrick Rose, him against Jimmy Butler, whoever the defender. Harden just had enough moves between the step back, going to the rim. He actually had a couple of underrated, I thought, finishes in traffic last night. But really, it seemed to be an isolation game, and fortunately, James was able to get it done.
Yeah, he was awesome. And as you mentioned, the Rockets with him and Capella just destroyed Minnesota. I mean, outside all of the really good teams in the league, and I'm counting the 16 playoff teams plus the Denver Nuggets. I mean, outside of Denver, Minnesota has the most difficulty defending the high screen and roll. The Rockets just did that over and over and over again in the first half, and that's why Clint Capella was so successful. And what a game he had at both ends of the floor. He was terrific as well. I don't want this to kind of get lost in the shuffle. I mean, Clint Capella was amazing last night. I thought, for the most part, also P.J. Tucker defensively had a really good game. But, yeah, I mean, it came down to James, in essence, in the second half, especially down the stretch, just doing everything himself. And, that's what great players do. That's why so very few teams in the NBA, honestly, legitimately have chances to compete for a championship, because players of James' ilk are so few and far between, and typically those guys rise up and get their teams, through some adversity, and he did all of that, and then some, last night. I mean, look, with that said, though, the Rockets could use Ryan Anderson in this series against Minnesota. He extends the floor spacing, especially vertically, against the T-Wolves. He has shot it terrifically well against them this season. Hopefully he'll be back in Game 2, if not in time for Game 3. But the Rockets obviously need better games from Chris Paul. I mean, that might have been the worst game he's played all season. Trevor Ariza, who ended the regular season in a shooting slump, began the postseason in a shooting slump. Eventually he will make the turn the other direction, as we've seen during his two stints with the Rockets. He tends to ride the shooting roller coaster. At some point, he's going to head back upward, and when he does, he's going to start hitting a lot of shots. Eric Gordon has to be better than 1 of 7 from three. Even though, again, P.J. Tucker needs to shoot it better from three than 1 of 5, but I thought he contributed despite the poor shooting. But again, so there are a lot of reasons and ways the Rockets can improve moving forward. But again, they got the win. There's no style points, especially in the playoffs, and they're up 1-0 in this series, and hopefully they can go up 2-0 after Wednesday.
We're talking now with Craig Ackerman, Rockets lead play-by-play broadcaster. We'll have more from Craig in just a moment after a brief break for our sponsors. Craig, we spent a lot of the initial segment, of course, discussing the things Harden did right. I'm not going to say that he did much wrong, but what's being discussed a lot on Twitter today is the controversy of, is his step back a travel, which it's been pretty firmly shown by the NBA throughout the year that they don't believe it is. They've actually, through the official NBA refs account, communicated several times exactly what goes into the gather step, but after one of his moves in the fourth quarter last night, it seems to have come up again. My take, I honestly don't know the rule that well because it's happening so quickly, and with the gather step, there's a lot of gray to it, so I'm not 100% sure what is and what isn't, but what stands out to me, when the league office has been as forward as they have on this particular issue, and this morning Mark Jones of ESPN, I'm reading his tweet when I say this, spoke to an NBA ref on this move, it isn't a travel. It's basically a plant foot plus two steps to his jump shot. The plant foot is nothing, and the 1-2 step is viewed as legal in the NBA. Bradley Beal, Jimmy Butler, DeMar DeRozan all do the same move. So it's one of the things, I guess it comes to the territory of being a really good team in the playoffs. We've heard a lot of the Warriors and their alleged moving screens in years past, yada, yada. If anything, I kind of like the fact that we're getting this out of everyone's system in round one against Minnesota, a team that the Rockets should be able to beat regardless, as opposed to this becoming a huge firestorm for whatever reason later in the playoffs against Oklahoma City, Golden State, a team like that that could actually beat you. But what's your reaction when you see some of the things that are out there on Twitter today?
I'm not sure how this can even be a discussion if the NBA officials say it's not a travel. Then it's not a travel. I've gone to broadcast meetings in years past, and every time you go to the NBA's broadcast meetings, there's a session with NBA officials, and there's, everybody from all the teams around the league, I don't know how many of us, 250 people or whatever it is in a room, and one of the things, exercises that they do is they run through some plays that are up for interpretation, and then they literally just sort of call out people in the audience, colleagues of mine all over the league, and put you on the spot and say, okay, what's the deal? What's the call here? And most of the time, those of us who follow the game as closely as we do tend to kind of get it wrong. And that's why I realize there's a lot of, conversation and issues surrounding NBA officiating, but I still think, can it be more consistent? Can it be improved? Yes. Are there ways for it to get better? Absolutely. And that's what they're striving to do. Both as referees reason from a league office standpoint, but these are still the best officials in the world. Just go watch college basketball to see the difference. Go back a couple of years ago when they had to use some replacement referees and see the difference in the officiating between those games and what it is for the guys who do this for real at the highest level. If they say it's not a travel, then it's not a travel. And outside of that, it's just basically fodder for Twitter and talk show conversations. And that's that. I mean, like I said, I don't understand why there's an issue with it. Now, you mentioned several players that do it. There are all kinds of players all over the league that have duplicated that step back, or at least have tried to. It's a move that a player's respect. It's his go-to move. I mean, it's basically, you know, you look at Kareem Skyhook, the Dream Shake. I mean, James's step back is a vintage historic move that he has carved out a niche for himself and is so successful using. And again, if the NBA and their officials say it's not a travel, I'm not sure where the controversy is.
I think that's a good way to end that discussion. If the NBA is as forward as they've been on this issue, I don't know what the point is in really arguing, other than, of course, on Twitter and some of the screaming shows, a lot of these folks, they just want something to talk about. Let's just be honest. So I think we can move on from there. The other big storyline in a positive way from Game 1, of course, was Clint Capella. You touched on him earlier, but especially when you contrast it to how much he struggled in Round 1 a year ago against Steven Adams. Now, I know Karl-Anthony Towns is a different type of player than Steven Adams, but I would think that if you're the Rockets, it has to make you feel really good to see Clint Capella, still relatively young at 23, but to play that well against one of the NBA's elite bigs, not just offensively with his 24 points, 10 of 15 shooting, but he had the stamina, played 34 minutes, held Karl-Anthony Towns to just 8 points, 3 of 9 shooting. It was about as good as you could hope for from a guy who's clearly in your big three, was it not?
Oh, without a doubt. He had the, 25 and 23 earlier this season against Denver, right? Did I get those numbers right? It was 25 and 23.
I think so. Yep.
Which was the best game of his career. I think he was. I think last night actually eclipsed that, especially with what he did in the first half. And again, the three blocks, the steals. Karl-Anthony Towns normally puts up huge numbers against the Rockets. It was basically invisible last night, and I think Clint Capella and P.J. Tucker had a lot to do with that defensively. He was spectacular. Now, can we expect him to go 20 and 12, you know, every game the rest of the series in the postseason? Probably not. I'm not sure if he's that high volume of a scorer, but he was absolutely terrific. The efficiency that you expect from Clinton, and look, he missed a couple of bunnies as well last night, but he was springy, he was energetic, he was defending the rim. He was terrific, and I think that was probably, under the circumstances, with being a playoff game, I thought that was probably the best game he's ever played as a pro.
Conversely, what went wrong with Chris Paul last night? 5 of 14 from the field, 6 uncharacteristic turnovers. Was it anything, a matter of rust? Of course, he's missed some time lately with the leg injury, or was it just one of those rare bad games that everybody has from time to time? Just curious if you saw anything that Minnesota specifically did to him, or if it was just more unforced errors from Chris and then just missing a few shots.
No, he was just bad. I mean, he looked like he was pressing a little bit. I mean, I'm not sure how much nerves he had last night. I mean, he's been in the league forever and has been in all kinds of playoff games. And I don't know, maybe he was a little nervous in his first game with his first playoff game with his new team. I don't know. It just looked like he was pressing, nervous. He was uncertain. Normally, we've seen him he's always a calming, steady influence on the floor. But he just didn't look like himself last night. And it's probably just an aberration. He just had a really bad game. It happens. Unfortunately, it happened in his first playoff game with his new team. But again, they won it, so you can learn from it and move forward. I expect him to be a heck of a lot better going on in this series, but I don't think it was anything that they did. I just think that he just had an off game, and then when things were poor for him early, outside of the stretch for him to hit a couple of baskets in a row in the fourth quarter, he was pretty good in the last couple of minutes of the first quarter. But when I think maybe when the game began and he was, you know what, he had no shots, no makes, 3 turnovers early in the first quarter, maybe that caused him to really press. As the game wore on, I mean, he missed, he missed a free throw, which is relatively uncharacteristic of him being a 92% shooter of this season. I just chalk it up as a bad game. And again, maybe he was pressing, but I
That's Craig Ackerman. We're going to take one final break for our sponsors and then be back for the final segment to talk a little bit more about Game 2 on Wednesday. Craig, we talked about Game 2 a bit in this prior segment with regards to Chris Paul, adjustments moving forward, specifically for Chris. In terms of the pulse of the series, in terms of the psychology of both of these teams, I know you can often have wild variations from one game to the next, but to me, it almost feels like Minnesota missed a golden opportunity because the Rockets, so many of the issues they had, we mentioned it with Chris, but we could also say the shooters overall, outside of James Harden, they were just 3 of 25 from 3. They were unforced errors. It wasn't like Minnesota did something to where they weren't getting their threes. They just didn't go in. And then the flip side of it, Minnesota had, at least on offense, a ridiculously good game from Derrick Rose, which almost never happens. It felt like...
He's had two of them now against the Rockets this year, but that's two games he's played all season.
Yeah, and Minnesota got so many things to go right. The Rockets, now they did have an epic game from James Harden, and Clint Capella, especially in the first half, was dominant. But it felt like when you look at what's sustainable moving forward, the Rockets probably have a lot better to feel better about heading into Game 2 than Minnesota does. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think from their perspective, yes, that was a game that they had and didn't get, and they had a chance to steal home court, shock a lot of people by winning that game, and ultimately they did not because of the greatness of James Harden. But Towns, again, was invisible. I thought, again, Tucker and Capel, I think, had a lot to do with that. But I expect him to be much better moving along in the series. In his career, he's averaged almost 26 points a game against the Rockets, so I imagine him to be much better moving forward. I would also think that their bench, which was for the second year in a row the worst unit in the league, maybe perhaps that's because of the lack of usage by their coach, who knows. I don't expect them to be that much better than they were than the Rockets bench. I mean, the Rockets bench has to play a whole heck of a lot better, but I expect Towns to be better for them. I don't expect their bench to be as good as they were in Game 1 moving on in this series. And look, Minnesota played the Rockets to a standstill from three. They were dead last in the league in made threes and attempts. In the regular season, they averaged about 8 makes for 22.5 attempts per game. Dead last in both categories. Right on that last night. That was their season average. 8 of 23. That's what they're going to probably shoot in every game in this series. The Rockets are probably not going to shoot 27% and going 10 of 37 from 3 moving forward. They're just not. Now, will they shoot 43% from 3 in this series the rest of the way against Minnesota they did in the regular season? Probably not. But they're not going to shoot 27% moving forward. If they do, then they can be and probably will be in a lot of trouble. But I think the Rockets had quite a few open looks that, you know, they had a lot of round and outs and things like that. I think shots that typically under normal circumstances would drop. If the Rockets just shot their season average last night against Minnesota, this is a double-digit win as it basically is against these guys. This is what this series was supposed to have been about last night, and I think will continue to be about moving forward. This is the Matt Bolton series. 3 is greater than 2. The Rockets are the absolute worst matchup possible for Minnesota because they exchanged 2s for 3s, and I don't expect the Rockets to shoot 27% from 3 as a team moving forward. Other guys will shoot it better. And again, hopefully Ryan Anderson will be back sooner rather than later, because I think in this particular matchup, he is really important with his vertical spacing and has played great against Minnesota this season. You know, obviously we're not going to have Luke, but hopefully they'll get Ryan back by Game 3 at the latest. But to me, that remains the key here. That's the reason why the Rockets have dominated Minnesota for 4 consecutive seasons and have really dominated them in the Mike D'Antoni era, and reasons why I think they will continue to win games in this series with relative ease, because they're going to hit their threes and Minnesota's just not going to shoot enough to keep up. And again, the Rockets, I don't think they're missing 27 of 37 again moving on. If they do, I'd be really concerned.
What's the adjustment for Minnesota? Is it just getting more shots for Butler and Towns? Because ultimately it's hard to see what they could do that much better. Now, certainly Towns, 8 points, 3 of 9 from the field, Butler, 4 of 11. Now, I know there's the weird thing with Butler's wrist that he was kind of playing coy with, so maybe he's not 100%. He's also coming back from the meniscus. But from a tactical standpoint, is there that much that Minnesota is likely to do differently, or is it just a matter of trying to get those stars more engaged than they were in game one? And of course, a big part of the struggles in game one had to do with how well the Rockets defended them, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I thought their Rockets defense was terrific. Again, like I said, Minnesota, they're going to be basically 8 of 23, 8 of 22 from 3 in every game. That's what they've been all season. That's what they're going to be moving forward. They get to the free throw line a ton. They actually outshot the Rockets at the free throw line, but I expect them to continue to shoot a lot of free throws and be very good at the foul line as they were in game one at 82% and 23-28. So I don't think that number is going to move in either direction anyway. So they basically were their regular selves at the foul line. They were their usual selves from three. They outdid themselves in terms of their bench play. And really the only area I think that they can, as a team, improve upon is Towns having a much bigger impact moving forward, because that's what he's proven against the Rockets offensively, where he's put up 20-25 points against Houston with regularity. So I expect him to be a whole heck of a lot better, but I think of all their main guys who played last night, he had the lowest usage rate. So I'm not so sure, as much as Towns had a bad game, but that's necessarily on him or other guys. So if you're going to give him the ball more and have him use it more, you're going to take away from somewhere else. So I'm not exactly sure how much room for improvement the Wolves have moving forward. And again, with that said, as you said, that's a game that they probably feel like they're kicking themselves. They should have won it last night. The Rockets, I mean, there's all kinds of room for improvement. Now, I think James will regress a little bit. I don't think you can expect him to average 44 a game in this series and knock down 7 of his 12 threes, but I certainly think it's a reasonable expectation moving forward that you're not going to get a horrible game from Chris Paul again, that Eric Gordon will be better, and Trevor Ariza ultimately will snap out of the shooting slump. So I think there are many areas for the Rockets to improve, and honestly, I'm just not so sure if there is much room for improvement outside of Towns just having a better showing for Minnesota.
Is there anything tactically you think they need to do differently, the Rockets, with Chris Paul getting him the ball in certain spaces on the floor, or is it just a matter of game one had nothing to do with that, he had a bad game, and just bounce back and hopefully get back to the version of Chris we saw against Portland and L.A. down the stretch of the regular season?
I think he was just bad last night. I mean, I think he admitted it as well. I'm not sure if there was anything tactically or stylistically that can change. He had open shots that he missed, 1 of 6 from three. Again, he had a good stretch in the first, couple of decent possessions in the fourth quarter. I just expect him to be better, because he has proven that he's better than this. I just think it was just a bad game, and we'll see better from him moving along. What did he average? I'm trying to see here. Do I have the numbers in front of me? What did Chris average against these guys in the regular season? He averaged 16-8-8 against them. Now, did not shoot the three well against them, but shot 48%.
Yeah, 48% overall.
Yeah, so he's better than what he showed last night, and I don't think there's any reason to be overly concerned that he won't be better than he was in game one, because I'm not sure if it's possible for him to have a worse game than he did. So there's only one way to go for him, and I expect him to be Chris Paul-like the rest of the series.
Yeah, and beyond just the 16-8, he had only 2.5 turnovers in 34 minutes per game against Minnesota this year, compared to 8.3 assists. So when you have an assist turnover ratio of better than 3-1, only 2.5 in 34 minutes, it's not like the Timberwolves did anything to him in the regular season that made him turnover prone. And obviously some of those last night, most notably the final one with 10 seconds left, were just, you know, it's nothing about what they're doing. It was just a bad decision at a bad time, and hopefully you learn from it, you move on. Craig, last question for you. I meant to get to this earlier. I forgot. Did you see the replay of the final 10 seconds of that game when apparently the TNT cameras caught Mike D'Antoni seemingly signaling to foul after that Chris Paul turnover? That's what made me think of it. And then the final possession, they didn't come close to fouling. Now, Jimmy Butler didn't even attempt a three. His foot was inside the line, so it wouldn't have mattered even if that went in. But have you ever seen anything like that? It almost felt like the Rockets were trying to psych them out on that final with a fake foul signal. I don't know how much I buy that, but it was really fascinating watching the replay of that sequence and what went down in the final 10 seconds.
No, I have not seen the replay. To me, it's the fact that both teams, James shot thought he had another free throw coming. On the miss. And,
oh, yeah.
And everybody, even the Rockets, are just standing around. And then Towns certainly looked like he walked and then handed the ball to the referee, who in turn handed it back to him and led to a Wiggins dunk at the other end. I mean, in a game where it came down to one possession, I mean, how weird, how controversial would that sequence have been if not, you know, if say, Butler had stepped back all the way and knocked down a three. That was just strange. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before, where everybody, including the referees, had no idea what the situation was on the floor. I mean, that's as much on Houston as it is on Minnesota, as it is on the officials. I mean, there's no reason, no excuse for 13 grown men on the floor to have no idea what the situation was there. But the Rockets prevailed. Look, I think the Rockets have shown that this season. My philosophy is when you're up by three, especially when the other team is out of timeouts, as was the case with Minnesota, and you basically you get between under 8 seconds, I'm fouling. I'm not giving the opponent a chance to get up a tying three. And that's just my philosophy. I think if it's more than 8 seconds to go, then I get it for interpretation. There's probably too much time remaining, especially if the team has a timeout left. I understand coaches not doing that, but just my personal philosophy is that if I'm under five, I'm always fouling. If I'm in a situation between 5 and 8 seconds, as basically last night's final possession was, I'm probably still fouling. I just don't feel comfortable giving NBA players a chance to get off a three to tie it in those situations. And I think when you play the game out like that, especially when you have quality free throw shooters on your roster, you just kind of play out the string and sulk it away at the foul line. But yeah, the free throw sequence with Towns and the officials, and then the ending of that game was crazy. It was not the cleanest playoff game, but again, those style points, the Rockets won it, and I imagine they'll be much better.
Yeah, and I would guess a lot of it comes from the regulars had not played since last Tuesday. They had the latest playoff game late on Sunday night, so you had 5 days off, really more than that. And you got to go back to March for the last time that they were not locked into the number one seed. So there's probably just
Portland,
a lot of...
I think it was the last time they played a meaningful... The win at Portland when they ended their 13-game winning streak was probably the last time they legitimately were playing a game that had significant meaning to it. It's been a while.
Yeah. That's a reasonable assessment.
And I think as a result, they were not. I'll admit that was a concern for me going into game one, that they were not particularly sharp in the last two and a half weeks of the regular season. Now, they had a good half against Portland. They had a good half, a pretty good game, generally speaking, against Washington. But outside of that, they weren't particularly sharp in their final dress rehearsal against the Lakers on that last road trip.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was, you know, again, that bothered me a little bit going into this series, but needless to say, they played a pressure-packed game last night. So for whatever reason, hopefully some of that sharpness that was lacking because of the lack of urgency in the last couple of weeks of the regular season is now out of their system, and they can get back to looking like the team that they looked like for the majority of the regular season, especially against Minnesota.
Absolutely. Well, Craig, thanks so much for the time. You've got one more game on the radio call on the Rockets radio network Wednesday night for game two. And then when the series shifts to Minnesota Saturday and Monday, that's when you get to go with Bull on the AT&T Sportsnet local TV calls, correct?
Correct, yes, sir.
Awesome. Well, looking forward to it. What, this will be your second year getting to do playoff TV calls, correct?
Yeah, I only got one game last year because game four was on ABC and I did radio, and that was over at five. So it's nice that I think outside of game seven, every one of these games in this first round series is available locally on AT&T Sportsnet. So I'm happy about that. But like I really enjoy calling games either way, and I'm hoping to call many, many more radio games between now and in the middle of June. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Absolutely. We'll hope that we at least get you a win this time. I suppose the one negative last year, game three against Oklahoma City, the one game you got to call, and that was the only loss in that series. So.
It was a heck of a game, though.
Yep, sure.
It was a heck of a game. It was fun.
Sure was.
You know, I mean, you can't win everyone. You can't win them all, but it was all you can ask for is having everybody prefer a nice, easy win, but... I'll take an exciting game when I get them. Certainly makes things a lot more fun for me personally.
Absolutely. And no offense, but I think you're on board and hoping that there is no game six for you to call in Minnesota of this series, and then we can just move on.
Yes. I hope, and this thing should, based on the matchups, should be over, I think, before it gets that far. But hey, you never know. Minnesota, they got a lot of talent.
They do.
They really do. I mean, their starting five is outstanding. I just think for them, it's not because it's a typical one versus eight talent discrepancy here. For them, the issue is a matchup problem, and it's not a talent deficit, deficit for them, because they have a lot of it. That's not the issue here. It's the fact that the Rockets are the worst possible matchup for Minnesota for a playoff series, because it's just stylistically, their shot profile is so significantly different than that of the Rockets, and mathematically, the numbers for them just don't add up. They have plenty of talent to win. They have plenty of talent to compete with any team in the league in a playoff series. This is just a matchup that just is a nightmare for them. And again, I just don't see Houston and Minnesota being played to a standstill from three in another game in this series. And if that's the case, as it's been for years now, then Minnesota, because of that reason and that reason alone, they just can't beat the Rockets in a playoff series.
Yep, I would agree. They're certainly a more talented team, unfortunately, for the Rockets than the San Antonio Spurs, who the Warriors drew in the first round. But conversely, the matchup seems to be very favorable to Houston, I think, as evidenced by last night, a night in which so many things went wrong for the Rockets, but ultimately they still got the victory. So, Craig, with any luck, hopefully you'll get to call a series-winning game in Game 4. Still a ways to go, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. And then from there, hopefully you've got quite a few radio calls in the weeks ahead after that. Craig, thanks so much. Yep, well, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for the time, as always. Appreciate it.
I'll see you on Wednesday, okay?
Bye, man. Take care. Thank you.
You too. That's Craig Ackerman, Rockets radio and television play-by-play voice for the radio. He's across the Rockets radio network, and on television, he'll be doing the calls this weekend with Matt Bullard in Minnesota. Those are the local broadcasts for Game 3 and Game 4 when the Rockets are in Minneapolis for those two games on Saturday and Monday night. We've gone a little bit long on this episode, so I don't want to have anything beyond this because, well, we're going to have a lot more to talk about in the days ahead. We'll see if we can line up one more interview tomorrow, and then, of course, Wednesday night, we'll be back to post-game coverage when we see what happens in Game 2 when the Rockets and Timberwolves get together again at Toyota Center before that series shifts to Minneapolis. So, until our future shows, if you want more content from me, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose, BenDubose. The show also has a Twitter handle, at Lockdown Rockets. Also go to website, LockdownRockets.com, a Facebook at Facebook.com/LockdownRockets. That's our official Facebook page. And you can subscribe to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, pretty much wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search for Lockdown Rockets, or really search for any NBA team that's in the playoffs. We've got a great network across the Lockdown Podcast Network of local coverage covering every team in the playoffs. So if you want more insight on the Timberwolves or any of the other 14 teams that are currently playing in this first round of the 2018 NBA playoffs, then the Lockdown Podcast Network, in my opinion, is the best place to get it. Once again, thanks to Craig Ackerman, Rockets lead play-by-play voice, for coming by. We're going to follow him on Twitter. He is at @CA_Rockets. And again, this is Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. So for now, folks, enjoy the rest of your Monday. And we'll be talking again very soon throughout the week, more Rockets-Timberwolves as the first-round matchup goes on. As always, thanks to you guys for listening here at Locked On Rockets, the home for daily discussion on Houston Rockets basketball.